Blog Talk Radio.
Believe everything.
Oh, that's the wrong one.
We don't. We cover what mainstream don't.
Okay,
welcome
is that
to
it?
Beyond the Mainstream with Donnie C, Texas Bob, and Cinnamon. Tin hat not required.
Okay, that was the wrong one. See, it's been a long day. Here we go. All right, nobody's here. Nobody's here. So besides 313. And we'll give them 2 minutes. If they're not here, we'll just cancel the show.
Why can't we talk about how much I love you, Donnie?
Well, we'll talk about that later, privately. How you doing, Donnie?
I'm good.
Right.
How you doing, Donnie? How's the help?
Everybody's doing fine over here.
Good. Yeah, I wonder where everybody is tonight.
You know, I hear they're popping in right now. Let's see, Jimmy.
Okay.
Let me get Jimmy on. Jimmy, you're on, and I think Adrian or Carrie. I don't know which.
Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Carrie. 313.
Is it time for me to mute?
Yeah.
Go ahead and do it real quick, Donnie. I'm over by the fridge.
Okay,
but,
I got you.
Then don't...
All right, he's muted. You guys take it away.
Hey, people, what's going on with all the stuff that went on at the convention? Go ahead, ask you. I was there for 3 of the 4 days, and the only thing I didn't bring was my popcorn's about all I can say. I keep asking why the monitor allowed it, and I keep being told by, let's say, people in the news, that the monitor was there to only watch over our financials, not on how we do things. And my bitch about that is, if that's the case, why did they worry so about a one-member, one vote? And how the hell are we supposed to get changed if they're letting them run the show? Take it away with your questions, please.
Yeah. It's it's a rough week. Jimmy, you guys are going to have to carry it for a minute. I'm on the phone, and I'll be off in just a minute, okay?
That's cool. And, you know, I look at Sean Fain, and somebody needs to explain to me, how has he changed? He's been with the administration caucus for 25 years. He's actually, I know I've been told by people around him, he's running for revenge because when the shit went down with Gary Jones, he felt he should have went up the ladder instead with Gamble and Curry. He stepped down the ladder, so now he's running for that reason and to divide our vote, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I'm not an analyst. That's why I'm a broke bugger and got to go to work every day. What do you think, Carrie?
I didn't hear that, but that would make sense. I mean, I'm just trying to it's a bit to move on.
I know, and I got a lot of friends that are in the UAWD that are shaking their head. How can we say we're supporting change when you're running this guy for the number one seat? And he's, you know, it's proven fact. He's been there for 25 damn years. What has he done? Nothing. What's he going to do coming up? His check's going to get bigger. He's going to get more pensions. He ain't raising a voice for you people. Wake up.
Well, I just think I can't believe that there's a group wanting change and they have somebody that they're supporting that hasn't done nothing, that's been in the current position that he's been in and has done nothing, has sat quietly and not done a damn thing.
Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make, and everybody should already know if they – maybe they don't read the newspaper or watch the news as far as the union shit, but if you follow it, it's easy to see. I mean, he's from that, I don't know, he's from the administration caucus. There's no other way to word that.
I mean, I was really surprised that that's who they're putting their backing behind. I really was, because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what I mean. And a lot of my friends that in the end are asking themselves, how the hell was that ever going to be bring change to the union? He hasn't stood up against nothing.
No. No, and so he must not think there's anything wrong.
No,
Along with a lot of other ones in there.
All he wants is he wants more greed for him. Think about it. If he wins, he's going to gain a bunch more pensions. We know all that shit. Now, y'all got to listen. I've been telling you people for 6 years, 7 years now, that once you hit the region as a tiered worker or a temp, you were legacy. They all told me I was full of shit. Well, y'all know that's true because it come out of some of their people's own mouth after this convention.
And how is that fair?
No, it's not. The one girl from California that stood against tiers, she straight up and said, I was a product of a tier, but I stand for him because once I got to the region, I got my pension. Well, did you all get your pension? Ask yourself this shit.
Wow.
Well, was she fighting for any of the rest of the people that hired him when she did? Because they're waiting, they're still waiting for that pension.
No, that's what I'm saying. This lady went against the tiers. She supports tiers of discrimination because she's no longer involved in it.
Wow.
Wow, isn't that just something?
Yeah. If you want to join yourself, push one on your keypad, please. Push one. We got a lot of callers. So push one.
Yeah, anybody.
Not
go ahead, John, but anybody wants to call in, it's what? 347-324-3752. Then you push one. Talk nice to Mr. Couch, and he'll give you the damn mic.
Damn. That's better than I could ever do, Jimmy. I'm going to make you a host. You're the main man.
What happened when they were talking at the convention? Were you there that day when they were talking about the tiers at the convention, or they just wanted to steer clear away from that?
That came up Monday and Wednesday, but Tuesday is when they literally had a chance to vote on it and put language into the Constitution saying that we as a union don't support tiers. Because right now the union, you know, and long as we do that, then we still have to take it to and bargain on it. Don't get me wrong. But if we as a union don't support tiers, then you're making them buggers go do something. But that's why they sent the plane tickets out to the delegates who went against them and flew them back out of town early, did the dog and pony show, excuse me, for Dana Davidson and You're Out of Order and all the other bullshit that Diddles did, you know, and sit down, shut up. I'm tired of this cult that's invaded our great union and accused. Did you see that video? He praises them people up on that podium and calls us a cult for invading our union, trying to clear up corruption that was only done by a couple people.
And that seems to be where they always stick. It's only done by a couple people, but a lot of people knew about it. A lot of people knew that was going on. A lot.
What I was totally amazed was I never knew those two trustees on that international board were for those length of terms. I'm not sure about the one, but I think that one was 9 years. But the one that Holderson got polished in, Scott Holderson, and lost to Dana Davidson, that was up on the board saying that was, get this, a 12-year term. Now, they already want to go to 6-year contracts, so they're gearing up the international staff to mimic that. Look at what I'm saying, you temps. Pretty soon it's going to take you 2 6-year contracts at the rate these boys go.
Yeah.
I think somebody said it best when they said, how can you negotiate just with what happened with the last contract with the Big Three? How can you negotiate 8 years for the temp? That's two contracts.
Well,
so what is it going to be next time? If they want to go move it where the contract is, what, 6 years? What are you going to have to wait, 12 years? I mean, it's just
ridiculous. Exactly, because, yes, that's what I'm trying to warn you people. That's what I'm trying to warn you. It doesn't say years. It says two contracts.
Hello.
We got a 313. You're on and 248. Hold on. It just jumped on me. See if it, okay, 248 and 313, you're on.
Hello.
Hello. Brian.
Yeah.
Okay. 248, I don't know who you are.
3355.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's Beth.
Okay, Beth. Nice to meet you. My name is Don. You got a bunch of people, Brian and Carrie and Jimmy and a whole bunch of folks in the switchboard, on the switchboard a lot. So go ahead, guys.
Well, I'd like to say that I agree with Jim. They could have put that language in the Constitution saying that we don't support a two-tier structure, and then we could come back and also negotiate that in the agreement. And also, I agree with Carrie. How do you negotiate language for 8 years in a four-year agreement? You can't. It's impossible. So that's the games that they're playing. Just like when we look at the convention, that, you know, they increased the strike fund to $400 per week way before the convention even started, and then they brought it back up on the floor again. They discussed it. They brought it up to $500 that would be issued out the first day, and then they tabled it, and they came back and set it back to $400. So my thing is, how are they able to increase the strike fund before the convention, then bring it back up at the convention? On top of that, how is Ray Curry able to increase their pension by signing a memorandum, but then has to go in front of the delegates to get a salary increase? They're just playing political games, and everybody's just – the majority of everybody's going along with this crap. Just like when it came down to the interest to the strike fund, they were discussing that. They tabled it. They waited to the very last day. They waited for the delegates to get into their cars, to get on their flights, to head back to their locals, and then they decided to bring that up after the majority of the delegates already left. And people just got to read between the lines. We're getting played. And even with the UAW monitor, with the federal oversight, believe me when I tell you that Ray Curry still controls the convention. It's still controlled. Because they had the delegates and the distinguished guests swapping passes, and the distinguished guests were acting as delegates on the floor voting on behalf of the membership. And the UAW monitor should have stepped in and shut that down. And it didn't happen. So I hope you guys can read between the lines. And the reality is, like you were talking about Sean Fain, he is part of Ray Curry's caucus. He hasn't said a word in all these years, and now he's coming out of the woodworks asking for everybody's support. But he hasn't given anything in return, and he's expecting you to support him and trust him. That would be a foolish vote if anybody supports him. And that's my personal opinion on that.
Okay. Anybody would like to spouse?
Okay, so wouldn't it be smart for Ray Curry to increase the strike fund to $400 the week before, just so he doesn't have to discuss it at the convention? I think that's basically what his forethought was, but since it was brought up, that didn't work out, so he waited till the last day to jack it up.
But what's the, I mean, but what's the purpose of the convention if he's going to go ahead and automatically make decisions without the delegates, and then, you know, the delegates try to bring it up on the floor just for it to get tabled, and you know, you got Ray Curry and the administrative caucus trying to confuse confuse the delegates into voting a certain way. Matter of fact, my understanding is Ray Curry and his administrative caucus was pulling delegates in a closed room way before the convention even started and telling them which way to vote. And, well, first he was asking them where they stand, and then he was telling them, once he knew where they stood, he was asking them to vote a certain particular way and to convince the rest of their delegates to vote that way. And then they would send text messages to those delegates on the floor during the convention, and they would tell them to raise up the pink folder so they knew who to call on, so they could just turn this convention into a circus. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, that just equals collusion.
Well, yeah, but that's collusion with our delegates. Our delegates are being used as pawns, and they're working against their own local, against their own membership.
Yeah, we know happened, because how many of them told us that happened, Brian, while we were there Monday and Tuesday. In fact, people, the last show we had, the girl even admitted they did it to her. Stephanie, I believe, was her name.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, you know it's set up. I mean, even when you look at Scott Holeson, look at how bad he got wiped out by Dana for the trustee spot. So,
yeah.
You know, as much as I don't, you know, I'm not a fan of Scott Holeson, I can tell you that convention is still 100% controlled, and the UAW monitor did nothing to stop that. So,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
We got a 989 and 260. And please, if you're not talking, please mute your phone. Thank you. And we got Adrian. I believe this is Adrian. I think. Adrian, is that you?
Yes, it's me. Good
okay.
evening.
Good evening.
Hello, Adrian.
Okay, Brian, go ahead.
I just said hello to Adrian.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hello.
Go ahead, Brian.
I mean, the bottom line is the membership need to speak out and email the UAW monitor and say, you know, this is a bunch of crap. The purpose of us paying for the federal oversight was because of the collusion and the crimes that they were committing. And so when this convention is being held, the UAW monitor has got to have complete oversight on what's taking place on the floor. And he's allowing Ray Curry and his administrative caucus to pull people behind closed doors, the set the narrative, to get these people to convince their other delegates to vote a certain way. They're using scare tactics, and then they allowed it. And then they allowed the delegates and the distinguished guests to swap passes. And the distinguished guests were on the floor voting as delegates, and nothing was done about it.
That's the one that blew my mind. And, I mean, it was so blatantly obvious that Curry stopped the meeting three different times, and they still didn't leave.
Those distinguished guests and those delegates should have been brought up on charges. Or not the distinguished guests, but the delegates should have been brought up on charges. But the distinguished guests and the delegates should have been banned from the convention for the rest of the week.
I agree. That was.
I agree with
and
that,
then
too.
They passed, I think that was four different motions they passed before we thought that they were all voting or, you know, I mean, it, like I said, it was just plain obvious when they were all sitting together.
I'll say something if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sometimes, you know, the bigger picture is a little bit bigger than most people realize. The conventions have been run the same way for 30 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know how they're ran. It's the people in power, the members in power, they maintain the status quo by the activities they do. But a broader picture I would like to kind of project to people is that sometimes you gotta give that rope and let people take that rope I don't want to say the words, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
And I think that's what they did. I think that they allowed people to take that rope to see if they were going to make a cultural change within our union, or if they're going to play the same games they've always played. And unfortunately, they played the game, the same games they've always played, to try to maintain control of the situation. They played those games, and I don't believe that was ignored. I think that was measured. I think that was weighed. I think it was seen, and I think it was docketed. And the powers to be, I don't think they comprehend that. I think people are watching. I think that they're going to see that in the very near future, that they had the opportunity to step up and do the right things in this convention for the membership. But instead, they were so worried about maintaining power and control, they played the same old games they've always played within the caucus and the structure and shutting people down and, you know, trying to establish a narrative. And we were left with what we were left with. However, that was always – that the whole thing was documented and recorded. And I think that will be – in the future, I think that will be referenced. That's all.
Okay. Anybody else want to jump in? I got 816. Let me get 816 on. 816, you're
on. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Let me ask that the gentleman that just made that statement. Does he think is going to happen? What does he going to think is going to happen eventually?
Well, I'll answer that for you. I think that we will eventually educate the membership with how the inner workings of the administrative caucus works. But beyond that, the federal government monitor that's overseeing it, they already know how it works. They just do not have the jurisdiction to intervene with that. Their jurisdiction is financials, you know, all the financial corruption we've had, and elections. That's it. Their jurisdiction is not within the means on the processes themselves. But trust me, they are sitting back documenting that. So it's our job as a union to educate people how things actually function, how the administrative caucus remains and basically maintains control through their means on how they manipulate delegates and stuff like that. But I think that will be exposed in the near future.
But when you try to educate people, they don't want to listen. That's the problem.
Boy, I hear that.
Because they're part of the fucking clique.
Well, honestly, they're not part of the clique. They're part of the environment.
I tell you what, in my plant, they're part of the clique in my plant. 2209 Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything about that, but what I'm going to say is that they are not part of the problem. They're part of the victims. They're a part of the culture that's established. That's all they know, and they fall in line. They have no, you know, you can't blame them for following what they believe to be right.
No, they're falling in line because they're told to follow in line, or repercussions will happen. That's what's happening. Trust me. I've seen it. I've witnessed it.
I have to admit.
I'll vouch for that. I'll vouch for that. That's true.
Greetings, you rabble rousers.
Hey, hey Paul. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. I've just been listening to what's going on. You know, I don't think any of these people are victims. They're doing what they want to do. They're taking care of their own self-interest. They understand if they want to move on to international staff, they have to be a team player. They have to go along with anything Ray Curry or the people, the reason why. You know, we're free moral agents. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, for example, that have been tortured to death over the history of mankind because they refused to give up their convictions. And the problem with these people, they don't have any real union convictions. They get in there and they see the union is an avenue to advance themselves, not an avenue of service. And the one problem we do have is the average union member has no idea what goes on at a convention. If they did, a lot of them would be really upset.
Yeah, but referring back to that, like what I said, the membership themselves don't understand it. The leaderships do. The leadership, they're full aware of it. But we can't blame the average membership for it because they don't know any better.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking about people in local leadership. They fully understand that if they want to get anywhere within the union itself, they have to be a team player. We have a complex system of rewards and punishments. If you go along with what the union at the top and management have decided, you're rewarded. If you fight it, you're punished. And, you know, I dealt with that over the years, but I didn't ever care how much they punished me. I hung on to my beliefs. And the thing is, we do have to educate the membership about how dysfunctional the convention is. Didn't they say that over 90% of the delegates at this convention had attended the last convention? Something of that nature.
Yeah.
It's the same group.
Is correct. The man said, I believe the actual number he said that was 92.
Yeah. I mean, we need some kind of accountability of convention where we have roll call voting. So, you know, what it boils down to, the same people that voted for a huge pay raise for our union leadership in the last convention voted to give them another one. You know, they're being rewarded for failure. They failed to stand up for plants. They failed to stand up for decent working conditions. They failed to stand up for a decent wage and benefit package. And for that big pratfall, they've been greatly rewarded. And on top of that, management rewards them by hiring their kids and creating international staff jobs to put their kids on. I mean, I don't think the monitor knows that the UAW is a prostitution. The Department of Labor knows it. The Justice Department knows it. And they don't seem to care about anything about – they care about the legal corruption, but they don't care about the moral corruption.
You know what? If the UAW got taken over by the federal government, What does it matter to that monitor or whoever the monitor's assistant? They don't care about that. They don't care. The only people that really care about it is us members on the floor and retired people that don't like this and people that know there's something wrong. We're the only ones that care.
Yeah. Well, that's why those of us that care have to really push for Brian. You know, the rest of the candidates don't care about a cultural change. Most of them just want to see who the next one receives at the top. I've seen this even longer in local elections where somebody doesn't like the corruption in their local union, and they get elected, and they get to see the corruption. They think it's fine. Brian has no interest in feeding a trough. He has fought this system for years, and we need someone like him at the top who has a big philosophical difference. But if he manages to get elected, he's got to go against a big headwind, because there's going to be a whole bunch of people in there that are going to fight him and don't want to support his program.
Paul, something, your phone is muffled.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
You hear better now?
Yeah, it's better.
Yes.
Okay. But, I mean, if Brian does manage to get elected, he's going to have a lot of resistance in the establishment. But he's also going to have the power to appoint
good people who want to do something positive.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
That's the fear. The fear is that we'll get this union back on its foundation as it should be.
Right.
And it won't be those people there at the top, in the middle, however you want to describe it, lining their pockets
right
off of the members' backs. I mean, right now, and the monitor should be saying something and doing something about this. Ray Curry has not been traveling around until recently to different locals outside of this state to campaign. How is it that he's allowed to travel to different locals to campaign on our dime?
Right.
Okay,
exactly.
And that is not afforded to every candidate that's running. The candidates
right.
that's running do not get to be off of work for union business. They have to use their own time. They can't
right.
travel around to other locals. They have to use their own monies. But yet and still, this person, Ray Curry, who's a part of the administration caucus, is allowed to travel around to the different locals under the guise that, oh, he's just going there to talk to the different members. But he's actually campaigning.
No. Yeah, he's
right.
trying to gather up support is what
that
he's
is
doing.
Correct.
Show
that
his face.
Correct.
Show his face.
And
because
so,
any other time, he hasn't been going to them locals like that.
That is correct. He's been
one
in
thing
office.
That got me. Did you see on his literature that they were passing out? It said the re-election. Did I bump my head? I don't remember him being elected the first flipping time.
He's never been elected. He was appointed. And he was appointed last year, 2021, in June.
Oh, Lord.
And from that
Lord
point
Almighty.
Until 2 weeks ago, how many people can honestly say that he came to their local and talked to them about anything? How many people can stand up and tell us, oh, yes, our IUAW president came to our local and he was telling us that things were going to get better. We were going to do something about this tier system. We were going to do something about our newer members not having pensions when they retire, not having health care when they retire. We're going to fight for that for you. When did
Amen.
He
say
that? Yes.
Well, it's his caucus that gave it all away.
Right. I don't even think there should be any special guests allowed at that convention because there should be a whole week of just time for those delegates to try and work on something.
That's true. We don't need the politicians there. This is union
no.
business.
That's right.
We're
not how did that show up? I wonder how much campaign funding they're getting out of all that to show up. There's a whole other bag of tricks. Because that's the next thing that's going to be in the papers.
That's fine. You look at a lot of the things that go on. The only thing that I could appreciate that went on at the convention is that they got rid of those damn noisemakers. Now, that I could appreciate, but this still didn't do too much good. They're still doing that same thing, pulling those delegates off in the rooms and telling them how to vote, giving them questions to ask. You could tell when they were raising up different color papers and they were being recognized to go to the mic to speak. We're still playing those games. I'm just shocked that we have so many that cannot think for themselves because they are so concerned or worried about, I want an appointed position, so I got to do what they say do. And you know it's wrong. That is just terrible.
Well, some of them are also concerned they won't get support in their plant negotiations, too. But, you know, years ago when Dave Yetta at Buick City could not get the support he wanted from International Union, he took him to Department of Labor and MRB. These people have a responsibility to represent us, and our local leaders won't hold their feet to the fire. They cower before them. I think the one thing the jointness did to our union, it took the guts right out of it. You know, we end up with some of the most spineless people I've ever seen in leadership positions. They really don't want to think for themselves.
Well, that's piss poor.
Because
the membership is the ones that's suffering.
You got that right.
You know, those people that's up there at the top, they're fighting on the side of the company against the membership.
They are.
How in the hell do you do that?
Yeah.
They don't care anymore,
I'm
Adrian.
I'm passionate about this. I'm sorry.
They don't care anymore, Adrian.
No, they really don't. Oh, it's so good to hear your voice.
How are you doing, beautiful?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you for calming me down somewhat here.
That's the problem. Well, they don't care. They just want to get to the top and get a second pension, and everything's peaches and cream.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's not right.
No, it's not. It really isn't.
Yeah.
And be able to give themselves raises, I mean, because just before the convention, they gave themselves a raise in their pensions. And I think health care for some. And it's like, how do you do that? You're not self-governed. You're governed by the membership. So
right.
How are you giving a raise in your pension? How are you giving a raise to people in their health care? Any kind of raise. How are you doing that? Because that's supposed to go through the delegate system. But you did this before the convention, and then at the convention, you get another 3% raise. How much are you getting now?
So they shouldn't have gotten a raise. They got a 31% raise last year. They shouldn't have got one, period.
You got a 31% raise in 2018 at that convention.
Yep. Yep.
And then you turn around and you keep getting these raises, but yet and still you go and negotiate the members, and I don't mean just the auto sector because we are many sectors. You go and you negotiate 3% every other year. A bonus the other years, you go and you get 6-year contracts, but it's much, much less than what the members are getting. You're getting so much more than the members. And it's like, why? You shouldn't be.
Nope.
Well, was it Nora Jewell's attorney that said they were entitled to it?
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. They do feel self-entitled, and once they reach that point, they're in control. You know, the sad thing is they have obligated themselves to help the company work toward continuous improvement. It's right in our national agreement. You know, there's no other union that I know of that's made that agreement, because what that means is if management wants a tier system, you give them a tier system. If they want to shorten your break time, they shorten your break time. you know, if they want to speed up the line or take a person out of the team, they do that. You know, the unions agreed to work with management to do these things, and while they're getting pay raises, they're bargaining agreements that are going to lead to the near extinction of the auto worker.
Now that, I truly believe that they're bargaining so much against the auto worker that
yep.
the auto worker could become extinct. And,
right.
and you know, I look at, and I've said it many times on this show, United Auto Workers, Aerospace,
right.
and Agriculture Implemented Workers of America. So you're going to try to make one part of the founding fathers of this union extinct? I mean, you've already did it to Aerospace.
Right.
Aerospace is very, very small now. So now you're going to do it to the auto worker?
Yeah.
It's like open up your eyes, members, and see what is happening to us. But by the same token, they keep us separated from the other entities, the graduate students. I mean, you got a few people that keep it secret, and they go and they talk to them. These other entities, we all need to come together because we all have something to lose. Every last one of us.
Tigers are the ones that need to fight hard because at least we understand the history.
Yes.
You know, we know what a union could accomplish when they try. I mean, when I hired in the plant, it didn't take long to get up to 12 feet. And it was taking 50% less than the seniority workers. And people stood together against the company. Now you have a bunch of brown nosers and team concepts to backstab their coworkers and rat them out to management. You know, Don knows that 40 years ago that thing would have happened. These people would have been too sincere over in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
Now if you do something like that, you end up being fired and prosecuted.
That's right.
They've done everything they can to gut the union using our own leadership against us.
Our leadership, our so-called leadership, is doing that to us. They have been. They have caused so much division within the ranks that the people fighting against each other.
Yeah. I mean, when they started pushing team concept in our plants, they knew what it was going to do because it had a long history in Japan.
Yeah, they knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. They knew it was going to gut the union on the plant floor.
From
the thing that the membership need to understand is these companies are global, and they're making global profits, getting local, state, and federal tax abatements, and the workforce is much smaller than it was in 2000. There's no reason why these companies can't return pensions, health care, COLA, time and a half after eight, all these things. They have no excuse.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, the year that we took concessions, Bellary still got their performance bonuses.
Well, I mean, you know, when you have a leadership that wants to undermine and lie and divide the membership and push these concessionary contracts that they negotiated, I mean, what else do you do, right? The only thing we can do is reform the leadership, and that's what we're trying to do. Unfortunately, the membership's got to be able to read between the lines and vet each candidate and be able to decipher between the bullshit and facts. And that's what it really comes down to. But if it starts getting like it has been on my page and some of these other pages where the hate starts coming out and is going back and forth, it is what it is, you know, because just like me. I've got tons of people attacking me on my page, and then everybody's calling me a bully for these people attacking me on my own page. I mean, what's wrong with that picture? You're attacking me on my page, but I'm the bully.
Makes no sense, do it.
No, because I didn't invite them on my page. My thing is, if you don't like my platform, you don't like my presentation, you don't like my message, why do you continue to come on my page and stalk me?
Right.
And harass me. But then when I say something back, now all of a sudden I'm a bully.
Yeah, we got another phone call, 586. You'll be on this. You're on right now. 586, you're on.
Yeah.
Hello?
Who is Joe Mammoth?
Yeah,
who's Joe Mammoth?
One at a time.
I don't know. I don't understand how the union is going to survive with all these paying half of what the membership is normally paying, like me and both pay workers. The union in the Solidarity House with their second pensions after 5 years is a bullshit. They work for us. I just don't see the UAW lasting another 10 years if this is the way things are going.
Well, that's why the Solidarity House has been diversifying over the years, because they knew ahead of time what was coming, because they helped set the narrative with the companies by pushing the auto workers out. They know this technology was coming, and so they kept it under wraps, and they've been playing us contract by contract, and these tier twos, they're being played too. They're just being used. How do I want to word this? The company and the Solidarity House is buying time to accomplish what they got to accomplish. So they're just using the two tier as long as they can. But they're really going to kill us off. I tell you, by 2035, when they expect to get rid of most of, if not all, combustible engine vehicles, you can expect that the automotive industry, we got 150,000 auto workers today compared to 1979, where we had 1.5 million. But with that 150,000 today, by 2035, you can expect that to get cut damn near in half, looking at maybe 80,000 auto workers.
If that many.
Yeah.
Well, they can eliminate the whole ball of wax as long as the union goes along with it. We have made massive concessions to keep work in-house, and managing still outsources because the union won't go after that issue.
Well,
they let
not
management
just that.
Outsource with impunity.
Well, not just that. If the, say, hypothetically, the union were to crash, those that are in office right now, they just increased their pension and their salaries. They already done lined their pockets already. They don't care. They got a golden parachute to jump when all this comes, when the floor falls out.
Yeah.
They have no interest in saving this union. The only interest they have is lining their own pockets off the backs of us.
Yep.
Right.
But the floor won't fall out. It'll fall out for a sector of our union, which is the auto worker. Don't forget now that there are many other sectors. This seems to be the reason for bringing in all these other sectors.
Well, that's what I said. They were diversifying the union way prior, for many, many years.
Yes, for many years. That's right.
And they're not done diversifying us. If you think about it, I still think they're going to see auto worker between the auto, gas, compression, and the EV, UV, whatever you want to call it. They're going to divide us again that way to get our numbers. You don't think they're afraid of us? Why do you think they said the retirees can't hold office? They know who the hell was what.
Right. We have many brilliant minds throughout our membership. And if we can collectively come together and stop these people from destroying this one caucus from continuous destroying our union.
Yeah.
We have to come together and stop this. I mean, you know, they're still not finished they're not finished with their investigations. Remember, in the monitor's third status report, I mean, you still had a couple of people. You had one that was, I think that was Region 8. He was Vance Pearson's assistant director. They caught him up in some stuff, too, monetarily. And like I said, if you read the third status report from the monitor, it's there towards the end about him and the, what was that, financial secretary out of Local 412 that sold $2 million.
Yeah.
So it's in that report.
My understanding, the other region is Region 8 that covers Freightliner in North Carolina. I was told that the regional director and the assistant director were caught stealing money, and I'm not sure if they've been prosecuted yet, but I heard that was the other region.
Mm.
Yes.
Now, wait a minute here. So it's only just a few bad apples, right? Is it just a few bad apples here?
Mm.
No.
Okay.
Well, the old saying is one bad apple spoils the whole bushel.
Yeah,
we got,
they
what,
know how
16
to do
of them now? Yeah.
17, I believe.
Yeah. Well, it's systemic corruption.
But the part about the corruption, I mean, it's just not about the corruption. It's about the collusion. We still got people that's there that colluded. They knew this. They said nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, our whole contract is about collusion. When you agree to work with management toward continuous improvement, you're working against our Constitution and our membership's best interests. I mean, it's insane. We've given all these concessions, and management keeps eliminating jobs. With all we've given away in our contracts, they should be opening new plants and hiring thousands of workers. Instead, they continue to chip away at us.
They are opening new plants. They're opening new battery plants, and
right.
And they're not unionized. How
well,
in the hell
point.
Are you doing
they,
that?
They should
How
be
are they
flooding
allowing this
our
to
plant
happen?
Because they won't. They've decided not to fight it. They'd rather get joint funds.
No, they'd rather line their pockets.
Right.
Yeah.
They
want to make those battery plants second tier plants.
Right.
Yep.
That's what's
yep.
going
That's
on. I know. There's some stuff going on with that right now because they're trying to fight over contracts and stuff like that, and either they're trying to unionize them, but they're not going to be paid like us auto workers.
Right.
That's right.
And they don't want them to fall within the jurisdiction of our main contract. What they want is a bunch of bite-sized units they can beat up on. When you had half a million people working for General Motors, when you went out on strike, you had clout, but when you only got 10,000 left, which is about what they seem to want to hit, there's no clout there. They can easily just say, well, we're going to hire replacement workers.
Yeah.
And you're done.
How long is our show going tonight? John?
Is going. We got 34 more minutes.
Okay, I would like to make a PSA before we leave the show.
Okay. Anytime you want to.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know what scares me is when this battery situation really does go in full gear, there's so many plants, so many vehicles that have been went to Canada, Mexico, Europe, new models, older models. When people get laid off from, like, engine plants, transmission plants, there's not going to be any facilities for them to go to.
You are so right, and that's what's exactly happening right now. Like over at DHAM, they should have called a bunch of people back to DHAM already, but they have a whole department of a battery side allocated, and they're not calling back the people they need to call back because those jobs are getting taken by the battery side.
Yeah.
Now, are they trying to do that battery over there where they got a whole different chairman and a whole different unit over there? Are they doing that over there at DHAM?
You know, they're not giving us the inside scoop of how this is rolling out. So a lot of people are skeptical. There's a lot of people waiting to go back, and they're not calling them back. And
that's
because
they're dividing it there.
They're dividing it. And we don't know the whole scoop of what's going on because it's all been hush-hush.
Well, you know what?
Yep.
I'm going to say this. Some of this is the members' fault. Get up off your lazy ass and go down there and protest. You want to save your job. That's your job. Protest at Solidarity House. Let them know how you feel. They cannot continue to not be transparent and let you know what's going on.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm not part of that. I'm not part of that.
The
people that are wanting to go back.
Adrian,
you know what this is making me think of?
Doing and not doing, it's a problem. Like, how are you going to go down and protest when you're not even sure what the hell they're doing? For sure.
Well, that's what I mean.
Exactly.
This sounds a lot like the. I don't know if you guys remember, what was it, about 12 or 13, somewhere in there, they were negotiating an agreement with Ford Motor Company. It was called the Hot Metal Stamping Agreement out of Wixom, and it turned out it went to non-union people, and the language in that contract used to read, those people come in the door 50 cents above the state's minimum wage. How could the UAW even be proud that they negotiated a contract that shitty? But that
Correct.
Is what this is smelling like. I mean,
yes.
It's actually what it's sounding like, Adrian. Just like it. Just like the way they
yes.
General Motors, big trucks and big commercial vans, and sold them off to that company, Verivian or whatever it is down there in Indiana. Those were our premier trucks, I mean, and now they're really tier two.
Right.
Yeah, it was Navistar. At the end of 2018, I was trying to get a 96 move up the foot to follow the product since we were losing the dualies down in Indiana and the single cabs. Well, the reason why I couldn't get one is because they were saying there wasn't enough product going to Flint and enough coming to us when we were supposed to be getting the extended cab or the crew cab because nobody knew that all those fleet vehicles and single cabs and heavy duties went to Navistar in Springfield, Ohio, and are being produced at $17 an hour on their line, and we're shipping our transmissions to them. And nobody knew it, and I didn't know it till January or early February of this year to find out why we were working all this overtime and finding out where our transmissions were going. I had no idea.
That's why
I couldn't get a 96 move.
The union has allowed Ford and Chrysler and General Motors to close the vast majority of their plants. So they don't have any play. If they want to increase market share, they have to outsource their production to another company. They don't have room to build this stuff.
Well, if they stop closing plants, that would be okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
True, Paul.
Management did it deliberately.
I know, but when I wrote the grievance in Plant 3 for my brake shoe line getting sent out to Bendix in Ohio, I didn't know the math, but I hired a professor out of the U of V. We were making that part $2.13 a brake assembly cheaper than they were agreeing to buy it back from Bendix. We were making it cheaper, and we still lost the job because Bendix was non-union at the time.
A sourcing rep out of the metal center told me that they were outsourcing work and paying more money for it. The thing is, their goal was to systematically and progressively destroy the UAW. And they've been very successful at it because our leadership has been willing participants in the process.
Yes, exactly. Just like when I kept trying to get a 96 move back to Flint, and I was denied following the product. And our leadership failed to tell us that our jobs are getting outsourced. Nobody even knew till I called over there and talked to some people that I used to work with, and they're like, hell no, we didn't know that. Nobody knew. Well, that's because your leadership down there failed to tell you.
Pontiac, Michigan used to have a huge truck building complex. They built transit buses. They sold that to Greyhound. They built heavy-duty trucks. They sold that to Volvo White. They built medium-duty trucks. They built S10 Blazers, S10 pickups, and full-size pickups, and they got rid of the whole complex. Because the UAW allowed it to happen, they agreed to the sales of a lot of these assets.
Mm-hmm. I was part of that.
They'll agree to all this, and then we're the last ones after it's already gone to know about it.
Yeah. You
even
were part of
us the most, even though it affects us the most,
and
where we live. You know, how we feed our families, if our community is going to, if they idle a plant or we lose, believe me, I've been to 3 plants, I know.
Huh. Yeah.
More importantly, what you're all forgetting is we're the last ones to know, so that all the holes have already been filled by their people that they want to protect when we do get a damn transfer, because I, for one, I was stuck at American Axle for 2.5 years trying to get the hell out of that nightmare. And everybody goes, what do you mean? It was horrific asking how many people were getting hurt because that workforce was turning over in such a mass number. I mean, hell, in that first year, I think we had like 3 deaths, if I remember right. Just in the first year, I could not tell you how many amputations of fingers were lost that first year. It was unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I
could go so many places with that.
Yeah. Gear and Axle is a big example. The union rolled over and allowed General Motors to get rid of their Gear and Axle plants, and that turned out to be a disaster. Because they sold them to somebody who ended up just busting the union and moving most of the production out of Detroit.
And Richard Dauk is now he's up there and one of the richest men from this country. Trust me.
Right.
Richard Dauk made out very, very well on that transaction of them.
Right.
Hell, there was 9 different locations he bought. He didn't buy the ground, though, because they all had ground contamination. But he brought the building. He rented leased the buildings up for $1 a year.
Yeah. And our union, by not fighting this stuff, is endorsing it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's quite embarrassing.
It is.
You
can't.
Like I say, you've got people in the top echelon that is not fighting for the members.
Right.
No.
You can see it. They're fighting for themselves. Yeah. They're making sure that they're good, but they're there to make sure that the members are good. They work for the members. It's not the other way around. We don't work for them. They don't own this UAW.
No.
And it's very sad, and it's very embarrassing.
Well, Lemon...
Well, they fight us.
Hold on, guys. Lemon Scotty in the chat room said, I'm trying to read it from afar. ZF makes the same transmission I do, and they're non-union. That's who Chrysler bought the 9-speed from. And he said, why are we not trying to turn them on with the union? Okay. Thank you, Lemon Scotty.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying that union fights the membership.
Right, that's quite obvious.
You think about it, most of these battery plants that are coming on board, from what I was seeing, at least in the beginning, they were coming at us as joint ventures. They're using that language to keep the union out of the battery plants, from what I was seeing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on that.
Well, what I mean is they fight us for contract, Jim, but as far as I know, since I hired in the Metal Center years ago, we've production turned down at least 3 contracts, and then they come back and shove it on you for a second or third vote, and we've gone from 3,700 to 400 people working at that plant.
Well, that there again, though, Paul, that's because we weren't allowed to bid on a lot of our work that we had there because anything under, what was it, 32 inches or some shit like that, we couldn't bid on no more.
Right.
We had all kinds of little jobs in there that we, I mean, we did armrests, we did handles, we did, and those were good jobs. We had a lot of elderly people in those areas, and that was a job you beat your body up to get to so you could have a good 5 years, six years, your last 5 or 6 years if you were lucky. But then they jobbed all that out on us. And now N-Van's finishing up. This year N-Van's going to finish up in F-A Bay, so that's totally empty F-A Bay. Why? Because all them trucks are now being built in Springfield, Ohio.
Yeah. Well, listen, what I'm saying is this is all things that our top union leadership agrees to. We haven't lost on the picket line. It's not like we lost everything we lost because we went on a long strike and suffered a crushing defeat. These things have all been given up voluntarily by our union leadership.
I agree with that. If anybody thinks you're bullshitting, look at the GM agreement when they signed it. It's dated, 2 months before the strike ever. I mean, that was, you're an asshole. You couldn't even clear your own screw up. I mean, I couldn't believe that. And then if you'd have kept us out 2 more weeks, it would have been a whole different ball game.
Sure. Well, Adrian's right. It's an embarrassment. It's hard to explain the performance of the UAW to the general public. I mean, we've worked with the company hand in hand, and we've lost 90% of our jobs.
Yep. And then look at the community. Look at what the communities lose. When you shut down a plant in a community, you turn that community into somewhat of a ghost town. You've got tax abatements that you've gotten from that community. That means that they're paying more taxes, their property taxes went up so that they could give you 15%, 10%, 15%, 20%.
Right.
And yet you close down and businesses lose out. People lose their homes because they can't afford to pay them taxes.
Sure.
I mean, it's a really big type of a snowball.
It's a tragedy. When you drive through downtown Saginaw or Flint or Pontiac or Detroit, and you look at all the boarded up businesses, the buildings that are just deteriorating, they used to be thriving family owned businesses.
Right.
So they they figure that, well, at least when the pay was right, when the pay scale was higher, they figured a, you know, General Motors job supported somewhere between 3 and 6 jobs in the community.
Well, you know, it's really hard to explain it to a two-tiered worker when you try to explain what we had and then what we lost, and they're looking at you as they should be, like, how'd you let this happen?
Yeah. They have to look at themselves also, though, because they are allowed to vote on a contract, and they don't even have the knowledge to know what's in that contract. So they vote, most of them, vote for that signing bonus. And so many of them are not going to get that signing bonus. They may get a piece of it, and others are not going to get any. But they get the vote. So they voted against their own interest.
But when you tell them what you had as a legacy worker and what you've lost or what they could possibly have if we all work together, they kind of, I mean, if you've never experienced it, look at it on in their eyes. If you've never had it and experienced it, then to them it's not a loss. Because they've never had it to begin with.
But we really didn't lose anything. We gave it away.
So true. But a concession is something you're supposed to be able to have the ability to get back. That's something this leadership, people, you need to understand, has failed to do to the auto people anyway that I'm aware of.
Over 50 years.
I mean, everybody says, well, yeah, they say, well, we got COLA back for John Deere. Yeah, but you put a cap on it at 5%, inflation's running 9. How'd that work out for them people at Deere?
Didn't they give them a 6-year contract, Jimmy?
Yes, and now you look at, you brought up something about how they voted on their pensions when we first walked in there Monday. But a lot of people didn't realize that bonus there on their pension also has matching funds into their 401k based off profit sharing. So they're going to really clean up on that back door, people. That's already been in the news. You can look on it in Detroit News. I think that was Steve Howes that put that article out. It's terrible what they're getting off that one.
Not to mention, they're getting money out of your profit sharing.
That's right.
So
what
there's
is it, 1.16%
situation.
Yeah.
So it's a double dipping situation. I guess they should forfeit that then.
A lot of things.
I'm so glad that all of you guys look at the big picture.
The profit sharing checks for most of us, it hasn't been like so great and special. I mean, it's not. Yeah. I mean, after it's taxed and what the company, if they've made poor decisions or whatever, it's not set up so great anymore. It's not like the checks when I first hired them, I've seen. So if you get people that are making.
The signing bonus is an agreement that you lost at negotiations. Are you people aware of that? That's management saying, yeah, I screwed you here. I'll give you a couple pennies. Now, you talk about all the shit we gave away. We gave a lot away trying to keep what we had because we were being lied to by the membership in the 80s. I know that because I lived it. I went through, 4 layoffs through there. And then in the 90s, they kept taking more. Then the bankruptcy had, and why the hell they ever agreed to go to D.C. and open up our pension plan, because they had to take that in front of some big people in Washington, D.C. to even screw with that pension plan, but they were allowed to do it. So right then, and I'm sorry, the temps, the legacies, all of you people, you need to start reading these contracts before you flip and vote on them. I'm sorry, but don't be ignorant, stupid, and then call me a bitch. I do bitch because I read. Thank you very much. Take it away, folks.
It's one of the real problems is that people do not read. They do not read the contracts. They do not read the local agreements. They do not read the bylaws. They don't read the Constitution. They feel like they're so entitled that everybody is supposed to tell them, you have to read this stuff, people, for yourself. There's nothing wrong with having discussions, but nobody can just tell you everything because something is going to be left out. So read it. And if you don't understand, ask somebody. Start talking to each other. This is no secret. We're trying to save you.
Yeah. And think about it. If you want leadership change, you don't want to vote somebody that's been sitting on that table feeding from that trough for the last 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, whatever. I don't give a shit if the person has no bargaining experience at that level. He's got morals. There's some damn good women on that running for VPs out there. And, I mean, what are you going to do, start picking on them too? I mean, come on, people. These people, their grandkids had no experience. It's obvious. Look what the fuck we've lost.
Yep. Quiet, I'm gonna do my PSA right now. My PSA is simply this. I'm on a committee, and it's the committee to elect Brian Keller for UAW International President. And we're doing a meet and greet on August the 21st so that you could come out, you could meet Brian in person, you could ask him questions. The meet and greet will be held at the Lower Huron Metro Park in Belleville from 2 to 5. There is a donation of $100. It also included in that $100 is a refreshment, free entry into the park, and there will be other little gifts given during that time. We would hope that you could come and join us. And if you want to purchase tickets, you could simply go on the committee to elect Brian L. Keller for IUAW president. We have a page. You could send money through Cash App. I will put something there so that you can understand what we're doing so that you could purchase your tickets. You can also reach me through Messenger. My name is Adrian Slaughter. I am the credentialed representative for Brian Keller. So if you'd like to reach me, you can reach out to me. Did I do that sufficiently enough? Other committee
Thank
members?
Thank you, Adrian.
Very good.
Yep.
Very
Thank you.
Professional. Very professional.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. We got some emails, but I can't bring my mail up right now. It's down. But eight of them pertain to 401s that they have now in the minus column after robust for the last 5 years, 4 years, I don't know how many years. And they want to know if you get elected, will you try to get a pension for these folks instead of them having a 401? Brian?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, these companies are making global profits, getting local, state, and federal tax abatements off the taxpayers, and the workforce is much smaller than it was back in 2007 or even 2000. So there's no reason why we can't get pensions back for those that don't have it, nor there's no reason why we can't get an increase for those that do have pensions that are now retired. So, yeah, we will be fighting for all those things, including COLA, getting rid of alternative work schedules, time and a half after eight. I mean, there's a long list of things that we need to address, and we're going to address those things.
Okay, that answered eight of them. Thank you.
You're welcome.
anybody has any questions or have any statements, now's the time to make it. You got about 8 minutes.
Take it away, Brian.
Yeah.
What do you want me to say?
Well, let's give the 8 minutes to you. You support the pensions. I know I've been beside you. I know how you hate the tears. I'm going to say a couple things that I know about this man. I've heard him in the alley. I've heard him in the room. Yeah, he comes out at 110 proof, but it's all the goddamn truth, and I can support that. Now, Brian, it's your mic, live and hot.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a union, an hourly union member on the floor in good standing, like the majority of you. I'm going through the same things as the majority of you. All these locals share the same issues and the same common interest. And the reason I'm running is to get this union back on its foundation and fix what is broke. And this has been going on for 43 years. I've been calling out this corruption and this collusion, the nepotism, them bargaining our contracts in bad faith. We all knew this was taking place. This is nothing new. The difference is I've been the only one that has confronted the largest organization in the United States, which is the Solidarity House. And I confronted them, physically confronted them, when nobody else would, because majority of everybody else was too scared to or didn't have the knowledge and tactics to. I've been wrongfully suspended and fired 9 times out of my 23 years. And I've gotten my job back all nine times in less than 4 days and gotten paid. Not because they wanted to bring me back, but because legally they knew they had to bring me back. I will continue to fight. I will continue to do what I have to do to represent all members within the UAW. That means if you're outside the automotive industry or within the automotive industry, you will be represented. If you come from a small local, come from an IPS, a CH, a GM subsystem, there's just too many companies and facilities and locals to list, but I will represent every union member equally across the board, and that includes retirees. So when it comes down to what we share in common, whether it be pensions for those that have them, that haven't seen an increase, or for those that don't have them or don't have health care, I will be fighting for those things with the help of the membership. So whether it be leapfrogging, people that have lost their time because a certain part of the company got spun off and so they lost their pensions, those are all things that we're going to be talking to the legal department to see if we can bring those things back and make sure there ain't no statute of limitations, and we can open those cases back up and discuss them to see if there's a way that we can legally correct those things. What took place at this convention, this past convention, can be fixed. If and when I'm elected, we will call a special convention, and we will readdress those constitutional amendments that were brought up on the floor and those that weren't brought up on the floor, and we'll discuss them, and we'll let the membership make a decision on exactly what it is that they want without any interference and control. Because I'm not your leader, I'm your representative. That's what you're electing me to do, to represent your interest. Man. And being that I come from the floor, I know if we don't sustain the middle class, then it's going to weaken the U.S. dollar. And if the U.S. dollar collapses, that means pensions, Social Security, and 401ks are going to get wiped out.
Yep.
So believe me, I will have everybody's back. It's my job to make sure that not just we can get back what we lost and then some, but building this union stronger. But I can't do that without the help of the membership. And that's a fact. So you guys are going to have to really do your research. I understand I'm rough around the edges. I understand that some of you might not like my platform. You might not like my message, whatever the case might be. But you got to look at the priorities. Right now, we're all losing. And we've had 43 years of this, and no one has done anything. No one has spoken out about any of this or confronted the leadership like I have.
That's true.
And out of all these years, I have not been silenced, and I won't be silenced. The purpose of me starting my union page was because I was banned from my local union page, and I was banned from the Solidarity House's page. I was not going to allow them to silence me, so I created my own union page on behalf of the membership. And nobody else can sit there and say that not just they didn't confront the leadership like I have, but they've been wrongfully fired and suspended 9 times and gotten their job back.
Right.
So I don't know what else I can say, but you guys realize no matter how you look at this, anybody can say whatever to convince you to vote a certain way. You're going to have to do your research and read between the lines. And you're going to have to decipher between facts and fiction. And you're going to have to make a call come November. Now that you have the power back in your hands with direct voting, take advantage of that time come November. Make sure you update your information at your local, your address, your phone number, your email, to make sure that you get a ballot in November. You fill that ballot out, you mail it back in, and let your voice be heard. Because if you don't, we're going to continue down this path of concessions, job losses, plants closing, jobs being outsourced. And that's, you know, that's a fact. I mean, I can't produce miracles. I can't even promise anything. Because I don't even know if we're on borrowed time at this point. 43 years this has been going on. And this is going to be a real hard situation to fix.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how I'm going to do it, but trust me when I tell you, we're going to get it done.
All right, sweetheart, well, it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart, well, it's time.
I hear the clock on the wall. You've been listening to Brian Keller. Our next president of the UIW.
Good night, folks.
Good night,
Rabble Rousey. Solidarity.
Good night,
good night, everyone.
Missy, nice hearing from you, dear.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome, hon. Let
yep.
me know.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, sweetheart. Good night. Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Baby,